You notice in the gospel reading, the elements are mentioned. Baptism always includes water. The word translated spirit could also be translated wind. The spirit, the breath of God, the wind that blows where it wills. And the fire. The fire. All these gifts and elements to creation and humankind we need for life itself. But there are two sides of each, are there not? Water is necessary for life. Bathes us, refreshes us, feeds us, sustains us. But too much of it can be dangerous, deadly. We live on the cusp of appreciating the precariousness of gifts. The same with fire that lights our homes, provides energy in so very many ways, but also we can succumb to its tragedy when it goes crazy. And the wind, oh, we know of the wind. Listen around the world, storms that we have had, and yet it is that wind that refreshes. So we are already alerted that we have to pay attention to what is going on. Things are not obvious here at all. But the text begins in Luke, and the people were in expectation. Echoes of Dickens' Great Expectations. We have, all of us, expectations. Expectations are born out of that which we have known and what we have experienced and what we have been taught and what we think, what we have suffered. Expectations. We could expect the worst at every turn of life because of what we have gone through. We can expect the best. We can expect a mixture. We can expect all kinds of things. In this text, the expectations of the people are for a Messiah, a Christ who will come and liberate them from political oppression, reestablish them as the choice nation of the world. Expectations were high because they were steeped in a particular tradition. It is why John was caught up and almost mistaken for that one, because he spoke words that cut through all of the barriers and all of the encrusted traditions that sometimes lose the kernel of life and the vitality of faith. And people thought, here is a refreshing voice, albeit crazy, dressed funny, certainly not outfitted in Armani, and so he might not be seen as proper PR material, but somehow his words penetrated to the people's hearts, and they realized what they have always wanted and needed. But he says, I'm not the one. There's one who's coming after, who I'm not even qualified to dress his feet. This one is going to baptize you with water, oh yes, but a whole lot more. This one is going to establish a new order. This one is going to recruit you, if you so dare, if you will join this vision of God to transform the world. This one is going to baptize you with all the elements necessary to burn away the chaff and to hold on to what is true, to blow away that which is necessary to make way for what is new and just and loving and hope-filled. This one is going to do a job on you. I wonder if all of that is ever in our hearts and minds when we come to celebrate the sacrament of baptism. Sometimes we are distracted by the cuteness of the children and their antics, and they are cute, trust me. I love the children. I love the cuteness. Sometimes we may be mesmerized by the gown or the cap or the fussing of grandparents and so around them or others. But I wonder if somehow the words of John and the actions of Jesus penetrate us and the significance of baptism is fully resident in us. I wonder. I want to talk a little bit to maybe dispatch with some of the tensions in people and to put it in perspective. Because we have this debate within our Christian church about whether baptism should be by immersion or by sprinkling. only adults or those of age where they can confess themselves, or children is acceptable. And it goes back and forth, and whole denominations are divided on it. What a sad, sad pity. Rather, recognizing the diversity within the traditions and what they stand for, it is absolutely essential to recognize that behind all of it, this acrimony must stand first and foremost, front and center, the grace of God. It must always point to that. And so the baptism of children, those who cannot speak for themselves, emphasizes that this is God's action. This is God's provision that is made, not earned by us. And that is an important thing to hold on, but it places the parents and godparents and the congregation and the community in a very pivotal role to respond with faith and integrity and earnestness in order to host with delight that great grace of God. The baptism of those who speak for themselves, who come and choose and ask to be baptized, who have not been baptized as children, is also a very important part of our understanding, our response to God's grace. It must never preempt or take precedence over, but it is absolutely instructive for each of us to know that ours is a call from God to speak and to live according to what we experience in baptism. I don't think you have to choose. I don't think it's that important how much water you use. What I do believe with all my heart, and even more so now, is that the significance of such an identification with Jesus and the program and project of God to change the world is much more important. We are being recruited into a new vision of life. That is why these elements are so absolutely important. There needs to be a violent, almost blowing away of that which impedes us from seeing what God has claimed us for. There needs to be a burning away with the fire of the absolute pettiness of the ways in which we go about our lives, so that we may see clearly the refined image and vision of what really matters. The wind and the water must somehow wash away from that which occludes our vision and our eyes, completely wash away all that distracts us. It's serious stuff. And I wonder how seriously we take it. The poet John Masefield writes, "I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea in the sky. I must go down to the seas again, for the call of the running tide is a wild call and a clear call that may not be denied. There is something at the bottom and the seat of our souls that cries out for homecoming to God." Seismologists at the University of California at Berkeley discovered some years ago that it is not only the water masses of the earth that respond to the gravitational pull and actions of the sun and the moon, that the very earth does itself, as hard and crusted as it is, that the earth is also moved and changed by the same things that cause the tides. And these issue often in little tremors in the earth's crust. There's something of the breath of heaven and the voice of God that calls out to us, even those of us who may be too crusted over in tradition and denial and unfaith and anger and doubt. There's something that calls to the very core of our being, like the earth's core, and causes a tremor. So when you and I are dissatisfied with all that looks very good about our lives, that somehow we are still missing something, that's the call of God. When you somehow know that the lie we have been sold to study hard and get an education, get a good job and move up the ladder and work and do this. Friends and family and health and the important things of justice, fade by the wayside because we are so focused. When you somehow, in a glimpse, maybe you walked by a window and you caught your reflection, or somebody said something in a meeting or a social gathering and you caught yourself and knew just for an instant that this that you'd given your whole life to is not enough. That's the call of God. That's the tremor at the core of your being. The seriousness of baptism is never fully in the front of our minds. That is why we have services like these. That is why we are invited to practice the spiritual disciplines that remind us. We're as likely to walk around with it in the forefront of our mind and lives as it is to sing opera in the shower. Maybe some of you do. Good for you. We are baptized so that the baptism that we enter into, that Jesus calls us to, that Jesus has modeled for us, is in order that something happens. Firstly, that we recognize the grace of God. Hear the words of Isaiah. I have called you. I have redeemed you. You are mine. Though you walk through the waters, you shall not be overwhelmed. They will not destroy you. I am on the job. Any crisis, any anxiety-producing, depression-causing, anger-producing experiences of your life are never more than God's capacity to help, to sustain, to heal, to buoy, to embolden. I am with you, says God. That's the breath of heaven. That's the voice of God. That's the way God declares you are God's beloved. You see, there are many things in the Bible that are very unique about, that are unique. There's nothing that's very unique. My English teacher would have a conniption. That are unique about Jesus. But his belovedness by God is not. Right after the text that we read and where we finish, Luke includes a whole genealogy where Jesus is from, his human roots, as it were. And if you read that list, the list is filled with saint and sinner, in-group and out-group. It's a statement that Jesus is one of us. Many years ago, his Bible translator had gone to Papua New Guinea to translate the Bible in the local language. And one of the ways in which this translator did would translate some of the text and then have it read out to the people to check what nuances needed to be corrected. And it was in this chapter of Luke that he was translating one day, and he decided genealogies seemed boring to a lot of people, so he skipped it. But then at the end of his project, he came back to it, and something happened. As he translated the genealogy and it was read by the indigenous speaker to the people, a hush came over. And he thought, oh no, I've transgressed a taboo. And as it was read, the people pressed closer and closer. And he thought, oh, this is it. They came closer from all sides, closer and closer with every reading of the genealogy. And when it was finished, through the interpreter, they said to him, why did you not tell us this before? Why did you not tell us about this background of Jesus before? You see, in our tradition, what we know is that you never include the genealogy of spirit beings. That means this Jesus was human, was like us, and it changed his relationship with the people. This Jesus is like us. This Jesus is the Son of God, I affirm and acclaim, but is like us in human form, and calls us and enables us and provides example for us and strengthens us in our baptism. Because in baptism we say, we are joining your movement, Jesus. We are going to follow you, Jesus. And we're doing so with open eyes, not with any pretenses that this is going to be rosy. We know that because what happened to John? John the Baptist announces that somebody is coming after who is going to go further than I have gone. And look what happened to John, got beheaded. Already we see the foreshadowing of the possible collision that will exist between Jesus and the project of the world, the project of oppression and exclusion and sin and evil and violence. There's going to be a collision. When we join Jesus, we are saying we are joining ourselves to this movement. But be aware, it will cost us if we choose to walk and live wet. Now get me right here. If we choose to walk and live wet, in other words, consciously remembering our baptism, God is looking for active do-gooders. It's not enough to look good. I have a nice suit on today. Maybe some of you haven't seen it yet. Wait till after the service, it'll change. I think I look pretty good. You all looking really good. But it's not enough to look good. God is saying, I need you to be good. I need you to do good. I need you to understand that we are in a battle for the world's best. This baptism has huge implications. We are baptized so that we may remember the grace and the mercy and the belovedness of God and the acceptance and even the judgment of God. Judgment is required to discern right and wrong, good from evil. God's judgment is pure and good. We need it. You and I, we need it. We don't like it, but we need it. We are baptized so that we may respond to the invitation of God. We are baptized so that we may order our lives and insofar as we can with our energy, the world in harmony with God's vision of how things ought to be. Some practical ways that comes out, the Millennium Goals, human rights legislation, struggling for justice and a living wage, housing for the homeless, drug treatment centers for those who need it, hospice for the dying. There are ways we practically involve ourselves in God's vision of transformation. We are baptized so that we also give our gifts and energy to the life of the congregation. We have a new governance structure that is waiting and in need of people from this congregation of Parkdale to resource its committees. It's not enough to come and sit down and go home. This community of faith is about God's work as baptized people, and everyone is invited to join. Today, after the service, after a little bit of lunch, because you got to eat, not you guys, but those of us doing the confirmation class, there are between 13 and 15 of our young people who are beginning a journey to complete that which was done for them at baptism. Today we ask the parents if they will continue to encourage their children when they're old enough to speak for themselves and affirm their faith. Now is the time for those young people to begin to quest after that. We're going to begin to explore faith and what they believe, the doubts they have, the questions, what it means to be identified as a follower of Jesus in a conscious decision and a response. We are baptized so that we and they may make a response. He's a well-known theologian, Henri Nouwen, who had a recurrent dream, more like a nightmare. He would dream that he was in a distant place and he would bump into an old high school friend. And the high school friend would ask him every time in the dream, "So, Henri, what have you done with your life?" And he was terrified. Oh, yes, he'd done some good things, but that question just terrified him. And then he said, in his life, he started to have another dream. Another recurrent dream seemed to replace that one. He wasn't sure when it first happened how it would turn out. And he dreamt that he had died and he had gone up to heaven and he was waiting at the gates, nervous. because of the dream he had always had. And he thought, oh no, now instead of his high school friend, it would be God who will ask him, Henri, what have you done with your life? And in the dream, God shows up and invites him in. And while he was shuddering, anticipating that dreaded question, he says in his dream, God said to him, Henri, I hear you've had some rough times. Come show me the slides. And he felt, he reports, a palpable experience of what the prophet Isaiah said. And he wrote this in his book. I have called you by name from the very beginning. You are mine, I am yours. You are my beloved, on you my favor rests. I have molded you in the depths of the earth and knitted you together in your mother's womb. I have carved you in the palms of my hands and hidden you in the shadow of my embrace. I look at you with infinite tenderness. And I care for you with a care more intimate than that of a mother for a child. I have counted every hair on your head. And I guess even if you're bald, the follicles count. And guided you in every step. Wherever you go, I go with you. And wherever you rest, I keep watch. I give you food that will satisfy your hunger and drink that will quench your thirst. I will not hide my face from you. You know me as your own, and I know you as my own. You belong to me. I am your father, your mother, your brother, your sister. I am your lover. I am your spouse. Wherever you are, I will be. Nothing will separate us from one another because we are one. It is that profound calling and belonging that we symbolize in baptism. It is because we are so connected to God that we may trust the perilous and the joyous adventure that is the gift of being a disciple of Jesus Christ. That is the so that of baptism. So that the world will be transformed, so that you and I may be reaffirmed in our having been beloved and accepted by God. Do not waste such a gift. Spend your life for the vision of God.